What's up, Seven Figures Nation? It's time for another episode where we're going to bring to you a guest who's going to share tools, tactics, and strategies to help you to generate seven figures in your business and join the 5% of business owners who are part of the Seven Figures Club. Today's guest is Jim Bishop. He's a founder, principal coach, facilitator, and speaker with over two decades of immersive experience in executive development, corporate leadership, and human performance. Jim stands as a beacon of transformative leadership through his business, Conjunction Leadership. Jim's journey has taken him across the globe, coaching executives, diverse teams, and orchestrating the modernization of leadership systems for transforming business units. Having collaborated with industry giants like Eli Lilly, Roche, and Elanco, Jim recognized the pivotal role of a visionary leader willing to first work on themselves while revitalizing their culture. This catalyzed the birth of Conjunction Leadership in 2020, where Jim provides executive coaching and team development solutions. As a certified coach by the International Coaching Federation and certified leadership facilitator with Blanchard, Jim's methods are a blend of science and art. He empowers executives through executive coaching, corporate culture, consulting, and team effectiveness programs, focusing on holistic development within volatile contexts. At Conjunction Leadership, transformation starts within. The exclusive Disrupt, Bridge, and Grow process guides leaders on a journey of self-discovery, mindset shifts, and measurable growth. So, bottom line, everybody, buckle up if you want to become a top leader. Obviously, entrepreneurship is all about leading. It's about culture. And that's what Jim's going to be sharing with us today. Jim, welcome to the show. There are over 32 million businesses in the U.S., and over 90% of them will never break seven figures in annual sales. So how do we as entrepreneurs or aspiring entrepreneurs break into that seven figures club? This podcast will relentlessly share the secrets, strategies, and tactics I've used to create three multi-seven figures businesses and bring in even more successful entrepreneurs than me to share their inspirational stories and tactics to success. You can create your dream business in life right now. So buckle up and let's go.
Thanks, Leo. Thanks. You need to take a deep breath after that whole bio. That's very, very kind.
Yeah, it was a good workout, though. It's a good workout. So, Jim, we'd love to find out about our guest's background, what makes them tick. What were some of the key events in your life? And I know you and I spoke about this prior to the podcast. Key events that led you to believe, you know what? Actually, I need to look further into this entrepreneurship thing, going independent, building something. What were some of those key events that led you down that path?
I appreciate that question. We'll just dive right in. You know, 25 years in corporate America, I had a front row seat to witnessing the best of leadership and also the worst of leadership. And sometimes I would see some leaders who just excelled, and I would see some leaders who flamed out on the altar of ambition. And so there was a journey in that process, even of myself, working aside those leaders and working around those leaders, seeing the cultures that they were creating. And then at one point in my journey too, you and I share this in common. We have multiple children, right? So for me, we had three children. We had in the plans to adopt number four. And as soon as we adopted number four, found out we were expecting number five. So on the home front, there was a really blessed occasion. Our family had just expanded the way that we, you know, not in exactly the manner that we had thought, but the number of children that we had hoped. And at the exact same time, my career was in one of those high shifting growth phases. I had everything in front of me. I had all the support and sponsorship that you would ever want. I had people telling me, here's what you should do. And all of the plans were laid out. And there was a particular time when I was traveling about 50 to 60% of the time, gone most of the weeks, home a few of the weekends. I was sitting in a hotel room in Dallas after a particularly exhausting week. And I remember myself saying to myself, like, if only I didn't have these children, I would be able to do this next step in my career. And it was that moment when I just felt like there was a big timeout in my life. Like, wait a minute here. These are the blessings that we've been asking for. These are the things that we've always wanted. And yet now something has become, it seems like those blessings have become an impediment to me getting my plan accomplished. But I could see forward, and I just kind of projected forward. If I took this next step and I did this next thing, and what would that mean? It would really mean less time with the family that I really wanted to spend more time with. And it was one of those times in my life when you just have to sit back and say, is really what you want what you wanted? Is the way that I'm working for me anymore? And I had to answer both of those questions. No, they weren't. And so that set off a journey of exploration and determining what is it that only I can do and how can I do it best? And can I get paid to do that in a world that's really hurting and broken around me? I wish it could say that it happened immediately. It didn't. I went through a lot of trial and experimentation, even in my corporate roles, to try and figure out how do I right size those or put them in a situation. I took myself off of that performance track and put myself into roles where I knew they would fulfill more of my calling and my longing, more people-facing roles rather than business administration type of roles. And over the time, what came out of that was I could see that people didn't need to be trained as much as they needed to be reminded, especially some of these executive leaders who were really excelling at the time and some of those who were starting to flame out. And if I sat back and tried to say, how am I going to solve that problem? Coaching popped out and said, this is the way, because all growth is necessarily first personal growth, right? And the leader has to go first in that journey. And so I started getting certification in coaching, learning a little bit more about it, coaching internal clients. And I thought at some point there would be a plan B option out there. And in 2020, the plan B became a plan A because it had to be the right time.
Yes,
there was enough disruption and enough things going on, and our leadership was horribly prepared to actually lead through that tumultuous time and what we now know as what has happened after. I just felt like that was the time and this is the place, and opportunity and preparation met timing. And in 2020, we brought this thing to the market. So there's
a lot of intentionality. And I find that with very successful entrepreneurs that there's this reflection on what has happened and their future goals and making sure that those are aligned. And when you have five kids like you do and I do, I mean, family is a big part of that. And obviously taking care of that family is not cheap in today's world. And so it's this juxtaposition that you're trying to solve for, and that those key events. And I like how you pointed out, because I think there's a misrepresentation of entrepreneurship, maybe on Instagram and online, that it's this quit your job and go all in and it immediately happen. That's not how it works. I like how you said, you know, it was a process. It was not an event. It was trial and error discovering, you know, the problem that you could solve for your dream client, and then really defining that, and over time being able to build this business conjunction leadership and help your clients to get the results that they need. Now, you mentioned something super important, obviously, that impacted all of us tremendously in 2020, which was the pandemic. I'm curious, you know, as a great leader yourself and someone who teaches others the principles of leadership, how has leadership changed after the pandemic, particularly if, you know, you're a male leader?
Yeah, in many, many ways, obviously. And most people feel that. They sense that. They just may not have put words to it. But the pandemic was certainly something that happened in 2020 that kind of that tilted the world on its axis. But we can't also overlook the fact that there was, at least in our North American culture, a lot of this cultural unrest and a lot of this political tension that was going on, right? We also had the tension of the election. We also had the tension of the George Floyd incident and a lot of the social unrest that was going on around it. So put all of those things together in a very condensed period of time. When you think about that, and we had just kind of come through this, what we would call the hashtag Me Too era, right? Where some of the wrongs of the past were starting to be revealed, and the rise of women's empowerment in the workplace and a lot more reconciling about how do we work these things together and what role do men play and what role do women play? Then we added on to that, what role do all of the cultural diversity that we have in our workplace, as well as political divides and whether or not we should get vaccinated, right? So
that's
much
a division. Lot of things coming together.
Yeah. And even as we say that, right, we can find ourselves getting a little anxious. But when you take that into place, at the same time, leaders were mostly only focused on how to keep the business open, how to make sure people still had a job, how to make sure that supply chains got managed. And they weren't necessarily thinking about all of these other social and political dynamics that needed to be managed in their workplaces too, to help employees feel that they belonged and they could be their actual self. So the term psychological safety became very important there, right? Mm. Now, I don't know how you were brought up and how you were raised, but most men were raised to believe that if you just get hurt, you just rub a little dirt on it and keep going on. Just stuff down the emotion, push through to the end, see eyes on the prize, and just hustle and grind till you get to the goal. And I saw a lot of my male counterparts working that way in the workplace too, and overlooking some of these other, what I would call human elements to the dynamics that were going on. They could focus on the logistics, and their business training and their schooling had taught them how to do that very well. But there have been very limited amount of acculturalization or accustomization to men's emotional leadership. Like, what does that look like? And how do you deal with the rising emotion when someone says that maybe you're no longer needed as much as you were, or maybe the right sizing of all the wrongs, you're feeling the brunt of that, even though you didn't express any guilt in that. Maybe you had no part of it, but yet someone's targeting you because of your political affiliation or your cultural association. And I could see a lot of my male counterparts dealing with that, but not being willing to talk about it because it didn't feel very safe to them to be able to do that. So there was almost like a distancing going on in that. And it still exists where men just have this ability to kind of compartmentalize a little bit more, and they can put their emotional self over here on the shelf while they focus on the logistical self and still keeping things running. And if anything changed during that whole time, is that work and life and emotion and logistics all became synonymous because we were doing it remotely, alone, by ourselves, in a virtual world. And people, especially men, were dealing with a lot of emotional consternation, but not having an outlet to really talk about that anymore. A lot of our social outlets where we might have gotten that were gone. So that brings us to today. And what really happens is, like, in order for leaders to get a good handle on where they're going, particularly in the entrepreneurial world, when it can be a little bit more isolating and lonely and even sometimes volatile, is you're going to have to tap into some of those emotional reserves and understand it. Because if you don't, what happens is emotions make terrible masters, but they make great servants. And if we can name them, we can control them. But if we can't name them, they control us. And I see a lot of men just reacting to what's rising up in them, but not necessarily understanding how to deal with it.
No question. And so, yeah, it's definitely a crazy time. And the last few years have been volatile. There's been uncertainty. And as we go into 2024 here, a lot of people are predicting a year of chaos. We've got elections again. There's political emotion highs and lows everywhere. And so it's certainly going to be fascinating to see how that works. For me, I think as much as anything, Jim, it comes down to really defining the values and principles that you live as in terms of a leader. And I think about a previous business that I started in my kitchen. We grew fast and we ultimately failed. And I had to leave that business with a ton of debt. I didn't, because my partners didn't share my values and principles, because I didn't do a good job of making that foundation of what we stood for as a company culture and having a big mission. And when we started our new company in 2018, from day one, we had on the wall, hey, here's our values. We do what we say we're going to do. We focus on the solutions, right? We're optimistic when things look difficult, and living by those values and principles really changed everything. And so there's a book out there. It's an old classic by Jim Collins. It's called From Good to Great. And you talk a lot about the difference between a good leader and a great leader. How would you articulate that? And as we look at these emotional difficulties that we have as leaders, as entrepreneurs, leaders in our family, our community, our business, you know, what are some of those differences that you can focus on, and where are those solutions for becoming a great leader?
Yeah. Well, there's also a phrase or a concept out there called servant leadership, right? And I'm a fan of it. Yes. I believe that we are called to leadership because you have leadership giftedness. And when you're called to it, you're asked to do more. You're asked to lead. You're asked to serve. I also think there's a fallacy with servant leadership. I prefer to add the phrase servant leadership with boundaries. Because I think sometimes we have a belief that in order for me to be a great leader, I have to give and give and give and give at the expense of myself, right? And there is a reason that when you fly on an airplane, they tell you to put your own oxygen mask on first before assisting other passengers. In entrepreneurship, in leadership, it's critically important that you put your own oxygen mask on, and you need to serve your organization, but you can't do that at the expense of running out of your own oxygen, right? And so there is a tension there. Great leaders have the ability to know how to have extreme self-care, to constantly be looking inward, to understand like, where do I need to grow, and stepping into those courageous dark spaces that makes them uncomfortable, so that they can model the way and become a better human and bring their whole organization behind them in becoming a better human. As we connect in our humanity, what happens is we naturally want to work together. We naturally want to get more work done. We naturally want to get good results. And more of our values, as you alluded to, become more similar in that regard. We see the same vision, if you will. If we don't connect in our humanity, and this is what I see as a challenge with a lot of male leaders, is we have been kind of brought up, and some of us have a belief that vulnerability is weakness. Never let them see you sweat. Never let them see you cry. Never let them see you understand that you have emotion, right? So we tend to regulate ourselves downward in that regard. If we don't connect in our humanity, then an okay leader can get results, and an okay leader can crank it out to get to the end. But what they don't do is they don't bring other people along with them and make them great humans. They don't help other people enrich their life. And here's my belief, is that we get to practice in our job, and generally we get paid for what we do. So your practice in your job should help you become a better leader, so that you can go out and serve the hurting and broken world around you, so that you can serve your family with a bigger heart, so that you can serve the PTO club at the children's school, so that you can serve on local government, so that you can. But too many of us get burned out about our day because we don't have great leaders around us. We aren't helping build humanity up. What we do is we hustle and grind all day long. Then we come home and we surf Instagram at night, hoping to recover, or worse, right? And that doesn't give us the opportunity to serve the hurting and broken world around us. So this is my definition of what a great leader is. A great leader goes out and serves with their own oxygen mask on, so that they keep replenishing themselves and developing great humans behind them. A good leader gets the work done, gets results, maintains a profitable business, and runs the system the way the system was designed to, but they don't really affect things.
Mm. Powerful stuff. So to unpack that, just the way you start out, by focusing on serving your clients, solving their problems, and empowering them with your product or service, you're doing the same thing with your team, with your employees, with your family, with those that you lead, finding out what drives them, what they are looking to accomplish, how you can serve them, and put together a roadmap for them to succeed, but also not being the end all be all where they come to you with every issue, but they actually grow. You know, you're improving yourself as a leader. There are boundaries. They can't just, you know, lean on you to fix every problem. In other words, you're almost empowering them and teaching them to be able to solve problems themselves. And a lot of it too, and tell me if this is also part of it, is I feel like you're talking about going deeper. It's not just the numbers, it's not just a paycheck, but it's actually having a business where there's a mission and there's a vision that's driving your team to do something bigger than themselves and really make a difference and an impact in the world. And I feel like the more data we see from different surveys, especially from the younger generation, like a Gen Z, et cetera, is if there isn't a bigger purpose mission, then it's very difficult to engage that type of employee. Well, what are your thoughts on mission, and how is it you go deeper as a leader and not just be that superficial numbers and push and drive without actually getting to a deeper purpose?
Yeah. You're hitting all the hot buttons of my work. So there's the theory out there called the optimal determination theory, or the self-determination theory. What that means are, what are the intrinsic motivators by which people want to do better, right? And we know that the three things are really connection, purpose, and mastery. I want to get good at things. I want to be connected to the world around me and the people around me. And I want to also have a purpose bigger than myself, or something that I know we're working for that solves a bigger problem. When we tap into those three areas, we can get people will do unimaginable things. They will go beyond, they will champion, they will support, they will work extra, give discretionary effort. And it's not because the leader is doing anything with carrots and sticks. It's because they've tapped into that sense of intrinsic motivation, right? And this has been around for a long time, and people have known it. It became readily apparent during the whole pandemic 2020 era. It was happening already with some of the younger generations who were brought up during our 9/11 days, or who saw their parents get downsized in their organizations. And they knew that work had to be more than just earning a paycheck. Because if it's just earning a paycheck, we can figure that one out, but it doesn't bring me fulfillment or satisfaction. The younger generations were already seeing that because of the things that they were exposed to when they were young, when they were growing and developing. But what happened in 2020 was this work didn't have a purpose. And we were sitting there just behind our computer screens, staring at an 8.5, 11 screen all day long with no purpose and meaning and on Zoom. We felt that in our bones. We felt tired and drawn out and eye fatigue and all these other things because it was no longer fun. The social connection was removed from us. We had removed one of the most critical elements of that self-determination theory. And now purpose was becoming more important. And if purpose wasn't there, it's being withdrawn. And so the last thing that people had to reach for was mastery. I want to be good at something. And when we weren't in community with one another, it's really hard for me to know if I'm getting good at it. So what did people do? They moved to another company, and the Great Resignation happened. And people started going and saying, I'm at least going to get good at something. Nobody here is telling me I'm good at it. I feel no connection to the purpose, and I feel no connection to the people. So the last thing that I have that will keep me determined and focused on my career is I want to get better at something. And we had the Great Resignation, right? And if leaders have learned anything is work in today's environment has to be bigger than the bottom line, because we can focus exclusively on getting money. And what happens is we damage a lot of other things. We might damage the environment. We might damage our relationships. We might damage whatever else, the employee motivation issues, because all we did was drive towards the bottom line. And if we only look at that as our determination of success, now don't get me wrong. I know as an entrepreneur myself, there needs to be more in the black and less in the red. And if you want to feed your family, things like earning money is a good thing. So business has to generate profit, but it can't do that at the expense of doing harm as well. Harm to other individuals, harm to the human psyche, or harm to the human motivation. Because then what happens is you're just constantly churning over people and not getting the generative effect that you really desire out of them.
Yeah, no question. And it seems like the trend is now maybe shifting a little bit from that remote work to more people being obligated to maybe come back into the office. But regardless, there's still going to be a lot of remote work, especially depending on the department for the immediate future. I'm curious what your thoughts are because it's a lot more difficult to lead when you got a bunch of people working from home remotely versus in the office. And we've got a combination of that here in my office where, you know, we let people work from home, but try to encourage them to come in at least half of the time into the office. And most of them do. And I think our top performers almost always are in the office more than not. But how do leaders continue to make that impact and give purpose to those who, for whatever reason, are going to continue to work remotely?
So the belief is that if you work remotely, you won't be able to find purpose?
Well, just it's a different challenge. If people are in the office, you know, there's that human connection. It's like, for example, you know, if you wanted to go on a date with a girl or guy via Zoom versus in person, well, which one has the better payoff? Pretty clear it's in person. And I'm not saying that, that's completely the case when it comes to work. But what I am saying is, what do you do differently to make the same type of impact as a leader when you have a bunch of people working from home?
Okay. Well, there's a couple of questions in there. And there's if I'm Leo's coach, I would step into that and just ask what the belief is behind it, which is part of my question. Because I think if you were to ask some of the younger generation, right, like dating online, it's completely acceptable. And they've figured out how to do it. Maybe our generation, that wasn't the normal way. But using that analogy, then we project our generational differences on the way that we lead. And so if I'm a leader who says that it's just weird and it's awkward to get to know someone in a virtual environment, it means I just haven't learned the competencies of doing that. And I'm much more comfortable doing that in a face-to-face environment when I can see you and understand you. Well, that might be easier because I've learned to typecast some people's body language, but I haven't really learned to ask deep questions or meaningful questions that help me understand and know you. And maybe I haven't been able to be vulnerable enough to allow you to know me in a virtual setting. But sometimes the younger generation has already learned that and they know how to do that. And you're telling them you need to come back to the office so that we can sit around the conference table so that I can see you. And they're going, but I don't need to see you. I already know how to ask these questions and I've asked you and you've refused to answer them. And therefore I don't feel like I know you very well, right? And so I get a lot of well-meaning questions like that from my CEOs that I work with, like, how do I get people to come back in the office and how do I get them to find purpose and how do I get them to, well, sometimes it's not about what you want them to do. It's about how they prefer to work and how they prefer to learn. And you need to learn from them because their ability to connect is so much greater than some of the older generations. In our older generations, what we did was we tend to keep our emotions quiet and keep our mouths shut, and we use our eyes to make judgments and values. And if I can't use my eyes and I can't see you all day long, I don't know if you're working and I don't know if I trust you. There's a belief system there that needs to shift a little bit for us to be able to take on new behaviors and adopt new corporate culture, I believe. So,
yeah, no question about it. I've got two employees in North Carolina. I've got two in Las Vegas. And usually they come fly them in a couple times a year. We're here in Utah, Jim. So I'd say maybe the key, and I think this is the point that you're making, is you have to schedule one-on-ones with those team members and really connect with them. And you absolutely can at a deep level on Zoom. But maybe I think that's the key, is the one-on-ones. It can't just be group setting only with those who are working remotely. So I think those are really, really good points. So when it comes down to—
I believe the one-on-one is important. I don't have a problem with the one-on-one.
Yeah.
I do think that, like with a few of my corporate clients today, their ways of working, we just amended them a little bit. And their meetings all start with a check-in question and allowing people to send an emotional or at least a personal response to that checking question allows us to normalize that behavior instead of, okay, here's our agenda for the day. In the next 30 minutes, this is what we got to get out of it. And I'm going to talk to you for the 30 minutes during our regular call. I don't need to schedule another meeting to add to our calendar. I can do a lot of that in the beginning part of our one meeting and allow us all to connect. And that builds into what I call the collective effervescence of gathering. We can generate, you know, when you go to a sporting event or you go to a concert, everyone is enthused about the same thing. If we build that in the front part of our meetings, and as we work through our meetings, what happens is we generate that collective effervescence even in a virtual setting, not just in an environment where there's already a lot of hype, right? And again, I had to face this in my own bias, but I believe that we could do that better in a face-to-face setting until I realized there are just ways to amend our ways of working so that we can do that in a virtual world too.
Yeah, really, really good points on that, Jim. No question about it. So at this point in the show, you know, everybody is like, wow, I've learned a lot from Jim in terms of what leadership means, how to implement it, digging deeper into not just the superficial numbers, but actually building relationships, creating mission and bigger, deeper impact, purpose. You talked a lot about that and instilling that in your team. And so forth. And so in this podcast, we don't want it to be a passive podcast. We want people to take action and to learn and implement and go deeper into these topics. And leadership is perhaps the most powerful way to transform anybody's business or life, whether it's leading your family, leading your team, building a company that makes a massive impact in your space industry and for your clients. So what's the next step that they can take to go deeper, you know, into this topic? And what does that look like with conjunction leadership?
Well, potentially maybe today we've touched some of these generational nerves, right? Maybe there's a
big part of it, yeah.
For people to realize maybe the way that I'm leading isn't effective for the way that the world is moving, right? And if that is the case, right, I don't want you to think that you're weird or you're broken. And I don't want you to sit in that anger. Because reality is you still have a choice to change. And it may be difficult because you have learned patterns up to this point. But when you reach that point of midlife and you kind of feel like maybe I felt in Dallas, the way I was working isn't working anymore. I think there's a pivot and you can step into that pivot with a lot of grace and courage. So in order to help with that, what I've done is I put together a guide. It's called Mastering Midlife Leadership. And there's 9 power moves for you to be able to execute to move through this point in your life and realize there's more joy and freedom in leading in the second part of your life than there ever was in the hustle and grind in the first part of it. But how do you break those beliefs and those paradigms that are kind of keeping you stuck in that mindset that this is the way that it has to be? Well, you have to do that purposely and intentionally. And as all entrepreneurs learned, action and action and action. Lots of common actions done over time produce uncommon results. So my hope is that you'll find my guide, you'll work through it, and you'll come up with some ways that maybe these 9 power moves will help you adopt a more graceful and joyful way of leading both your companies and the hurting world around you. So if you're interested in finding that, you can just find it at my website, conjunctionleadership.com. There's a button there that says download the free PDF. If you want to find it on LinkedIn, I'm pretty active there as well, where you can click on the button and it will also take you to the guide. And it take you back to my website and ultimately find more information about who we are and what we do. But my hope is that leaders step into this space, step into the courage space of saying, if anything's going to change, I've got to be the one that changes first. So if you want to see change in your bottom line, or if you want to see change in the way the world operates, the first thing that you can do is change the way that you operate.
I like that. It kind of reminds me of an adage that it's not the strongest, it's not the smartest who generate the most success. It's those who adapt to change the quickest. And that is key. And there's no question our world changes more than it ever has. In the last 4 years, maybe it's accelerated what would have taken 10 years of change or 15 and put that into 4 years. And so things have changed dramatically. But what must change is each of us as leaders. So make sure you guys go to conjunctionleadership.com, about 3/4 of the way down the page there. You can download the free ebook, Mastering Midlife Leadership. And understanding a couple key takeaways I'm going to take away from this podcast is leaders must be vulnerable. Nobody connects or resonates with the perfect leader who's never had a failure or mistake. Sharing those failings and those missteps and how you learn from them as a leader with your team, vital and important. And also understanding the differences in generations and that the way you think is not necessarily the way your team or client thinks. And getting, you know, as the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, seek first to understand and then to be understood second. I think that's really encapsulates a lot of the wonderful leadership that Jim has taught with us today. Make sure you guys connect with Jim Bishop on LinkedIn. And Jim, thank you so much for being a guest on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the work that you do, Leo. Really appreciate it.
Are you looking for more 7-figure secrets, content, or even how you can launch your own recession-proof business? Then check out 7figures.com. That's the digit 7, figures.com, where we share more videos, stories, strategies, funding solutions, entrepreneurial education, and even the secret business type that's recession-proof. Thank you for listening, and if you're finding value in our podcast, please give us a 5-star and invite others to join the club.